First of all, I wanted you to talk a little bit about how you came to the stories that you collected for this book. There's such a range of people and a range of journeys.
The book, Carried in Our Hearts, is really a collection. It's a tribute to the patients and families who I took care of over the last 20 years, let's say. So there are 10 chapters, if you will, including a preface and epilogue, that shape the actual process of how people decide about adoption.
My wife and I adopted a couple of years ago, and one of the things that struck me early on, being in Georgia, the first of many eye-opening moments was we're an interracial couple. I'm white and she's African American. They're explaining to us the types of babies you can adopt, and they started using the term special needs freely. And it took me a while to understand that one of the things that she was trying to say was a black child, in their eyes, was a special needs baby. Really, that was my first aha moment in the adoption process.
The interesting part of that discussion when you brought up special needs is very important. And that is that all children who will be adopted or who may be at-risk kids or orphans are special needs kids. And the reason I say that so clearly and bluntly, whatever their color or their ethnic background, is because they've come into the world where there are not the optimal circumstances for their physical and behavioral well-being.
How does this book start to clear that picture in popular culture and in culture for what the adoption process feels like in comparison and contrast to the more traditional pregnancy?
What I really think the book is really great at is it really shows parents struggling to become parents and to create a family, and the intensity of people's passion and devotion.
We're ignoring the obvious. Talk about your own beginning personal history with the world of adoption. How did you become so involved?
I like to talk about that. I have two lovely boys. The one, 13, Ben, he was adopted from Vietnam at 4 months of age. And then Desalyn, who was born and raised in Ethiopia until he was came to us at 6 years of age, and will be turning 15 in July. I have the same, experiences that people have in this process of being up and down and feeling afraid. And even though I was an adoption doctor, I really feel like I weathered storms just like everybody else.
One of the most surprising aspects of being a parent for me in just 2 years was the notion of protection. The odd moment for me came in a parking lot where some children were clearly curious that I was loading this African American boy into my car, and they were asking me questions that kind of got under my skin. It was the first time I felt a pretty ferocious sense of protection for a child who was not biologically mine.
For most people who become parents through adoption, people really do feel generally like that child is their child. I think the protection that you experience might be also particular to the fact that you are white and your child is black. And I think that, transracial and interracial adoption is different. 40-plus years ago, about white people adopting black children, there was a whole social work system that existed that looked at it as with great disdain. And thank God that's changed over the years. Believe it or not, I think that adoption, especially transracial adoption, has really helped people with racism and with this attitude that there's something not healthy about a child being brought up by a different race parent. And I really have to say to you that I think we do a good job, not just that we're good parents necessarily, but that we're very eager to make sure that our children feel connected with their identity. And it may be simple, but let me just share with you a simple story. I think hair is really important to your identity. And in fact, when Des came as an Ethiopian boy to our community and our family, he looked around and saw a lot of white people and had lived in a country where he was in the majority. And he didn't want to have those little curls. He wanted straight hair like his brother Ben from Vietnam. And then what we ended up doing, which was just really so organic, which I love so much, is each of the boys goes to a hair emporium, a salon, that's particular to their ethnicity. So we take Des to Lucky Seven. He gets his hair cut by Yusuf. He's got that feeling that someone really knows his hair and knows him, and he's in an environment that feels safe. Talk about safety.
That's funny you say that, because my favorite father-son moment is when I take my son Elijah to the East Atlanta Village barber shop, and we wait for the barber, and there's a particular barber whom he loves and who loves Eli, and he spends what feels like an hour and a half to 2 hours in a more familiar cultural element where the female stylists just fall in love with him. The other barbers are laughing at him laughing. And I'm just sitting there soaking it all in. And it's my favorite moment because I feel like this is his place for a moment where he can really feel comfortable in his own skin, even at 22 months old, because as we'll continue to do that, this will be our tradition.
I can see it. It's just very powerful and simple.
I joke to my friends. I'm like, I am so hooked into this child. Like, it freaks me out. And I think it freaks out my friends, especially on Facebook, how I have become like the oversharing, photo-taking, my kid just burped and isn't it great, dad?
There's no such thing as oversharing. It's so funny how we judge ourselves.
It's amazing how they will hook you and just make you so into what they are and what you want them to become and what you think they can become.
Yeah. When you love a child, that's, you know, the greatest love of all.